I am an artist living in beautiful Vermont, USA, and I have a lot of questions. So I engage the minds of the people that I meet, poets, writers, artists. I explore what's inside and share it with you. My name is Ricky McEachran, and I am eager to know.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Eager to Know. Today's guest is David Billings, who is executive director at Our Place Drop-In Center, which is a food pantry and...
A meal center.
Yeah. Welcome to Eager to Know.
All right, thank you for having me.
So tell me, first of all, a little bit about what Our Place does.
Well, Our Place, we help bridge the gap between what people need to survive and what they have to survive. So if they find themselves short on money, one of the first things people do is sacrifice on food. It's a big expense here in Vermont. It's higher than most states in America. Vermont's a very expensive place to feed yourself in. So what we do is we provide supplemental groceries and hot meals 5 days a week during the week for people.
Five days a week, hot meals. So
correct.
You can... anyone can just show up.
Anyone can just show up. Yeah, there's no criteria for you coming down to Our Place to use our services. It's free for anybody in the community.
Okay. Now, I have never enjoyed any of the hot meals, but I have been in there when the hot meals were being prepared. And you guys were preparing ham salad, which is was one of my personal favorites.
Excellent.
And that's, so 5 days a week, hot meals, that's...
Right. So breakfast and lunch, we serve breakfast from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m., and then lunch from 11 to 12:30.
Okay, and then you also mentioned groceries available. Tell me a little bit about how that
works.
So
Monday and Wednesday and Fridays, by appointments, people can make an appointment and come on down, and they can shop our aisles that we have, fresh produce, canned vegetables, and those type of things that they can use to... I mean, it's not... I don't think you can... eat fully from the food pantry, but right. You can definitely supplement significantly your grocery bill.
Yeah. And you mentioned that food costs are higher in Vermont, and I definitely noticed that when I moved here. I moved here about 2 years ago, and I was coming from Chicago,
right.
Which has, I feel like, very low food count. There's so many people. There's
right.
so many grocery stores. There's such a large population. It was very, very inexpensive to purchase. I'm a big vegetable eater.
Okay.
So to purchase vegetables, it was very inexpensive. When I moved to Vermont, I was shocked at how much more it was. And I guess that's because there's not a lot of grocery stores.
Yeah, I think it's the lack of competition. But I experienced the same thing. I'm from New Jersey, and there. You know, you can get produce, like factory produce, there at significantly less prices than you see here in Vermont. And then not to mention, like, the organic produce, which is excellent up here in Vermont, but it's a premium, and it's out of reach for a lot of people that live here.
Yeah. And you are pretty busy with people coming for these meals, I assume?
Yeah,
there's a big population that has a need for, that has a gap
right.
between what they can provide, but what they can provide themselves and what you are able to offer.
So in the food pantry side, we're supplementing grocery for about 90 families in our community every month. And as far as the meals concerned, we do about 100 hot meals a day, with that includes breakfast and lunch, between 100 and 150 meals every day, depending on how many people show up, what time of the month it is. And also what time of year it is. We have a little bit of an influx in the summertime because the weather is nice. So we get a little bit more transient people coming through. So we see some upticks in the summertime, but it's pretty steady, around 100 meals a day.
Okay. And so our place is in Bellows Falls, Vermont.
Right.
So people that are listening to this and are watching this and are in the area, that is a service that's available. But also, if you are someone that can volunteer your time, tell me about the needs that you would have from the community.
So we have some needs for volunteers. We're definitely expanding our programs a little bit. We manage with 4 people, the day-to-day operations of what we do, but there's always some room for expanding out, like delivering food to people. And so those are things that we could definitely use some help with as far as volunteers are concerned. Also coming down and manning the food pantry is another thing that people can come and do, and that's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Okay, great. And if they were interested in participating in those volunteer, they would do what?
They could just give a call down to our place or send me an email or just come on down.
Okay, great. And the website for our place, I'll put it at the bottom of the video, but
it's it's www.ourplacevermont, all spelled out, .org.
Our place,
Vermont.
Vermont.
.org. You got to spell that all out.
All right, great. All right, so let's talk about you, because you are doing this now, but you come from a place that is very different.
Very different.
And doing something different. Yep. So doing something very different. You've done a variety of things. And tell me about some of the things that you had done in the past that led you to here,
sure,
that are related to what you're doing now.
Well, my first real career job after I got out of college was I worked for Payne Weber. I was a retail broker for Payne Weber. I worked there for 8 years, sold stocks and bonds. I'd probably still be there if they weren't purchased by UBS, the big Swiss bank.
Yeah.
So when they came in, they shook up everyone and kind of, that's so I had to take my bags and move to Morgan Stanley. I went to Morgan Stanley for 2 years. And then after that, my wife was a senior analyst at J.P. Morgan, and she, she was making good money. I decided it was time to do something different.
And you were living where? You were living and working where?
Yeah, in central New Jersey, right outside of New York City.
Okay. And were you working in central New Jersey, or were you working in New York City?
Well, I did do some work in New York City, but most of my career was spent in New Jersey.
Okay. So I used to live in southern New Jersey, and I used to spend a lot of time in northern New Jersey. And I would say that the topography of northern New Jersey is very similar to Vermont.
Yeah,
it kind of looks the same.
It does.
But it's just got a lot of people and a lot of buildings.
Yeah,
so it's kind of hard to see all that.
Yeah, 17 million people in the state the size of Vermont. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's a lot of people there.
So you did sort of the financial world, and then you shifted into something that was more around like the restaurant world. Is that correct?
So how I paid for my college was through working in restaurants, which a lot of people do. And then when the job was getting a grind after I got had to move from UBS, I decided to open up my own restaurant. So. I took the big plunge and I opened up a high-end diner in Central Jersey with two big diners right around the corner from me. I didn't care about the competition. I just felt that I could do it better.
So did you purchase a diner or lease a space that was already an existing space?
Yes.
Okay, and you moved in and you upgraded the menu to something a little bit more high-end?
Yeah, I bought a struggling diner from a person who was getting out. I took his equipment that he started with and just started using it as my seed and grew a business from there that lasted for me almost 15 years.
15 years. And how much work was that?
An enormous amount of work. I mean, 80 hours a week was not uncommon.
Okay. So I have to tell you a story. When I lived in Boston, I had someone that lived very close to me. And he was in a different industry. He was in like the pharmaceutical industry. And he decided that he was going to be purchasing a restaurant in Boston because he frequented a lot. And he decided that he was going to change careers and get into the restaurant business. And I went to look at the restaurant when it was under construction. And I remember him telling me that he was looking forward to the fact that he could be at the beach all day, and then he would just come in at night just to check on things, to see how things were going. And I remember thinking, I don't have a lot of experience in restaurants, but I'm thinking, this guy's crazy. Like, owning a restaurant is so much work. I don't know why he was thinking that. I obviously followed up with him, and it definitely was not what he had envisioned,
right.
And it was way more work than he had expected. So 15 years of just busting your butt.
Yeah.
Now, what was the highlight, the parts of that job that you really enjoyed, if any?
Well, I love uplifting people. I don't want to mean to sound corny, but I like to take people who maybe struggle with in a job that most restaurant jobs don't pay very well. Mm-hmm. One of my big things was paying everyone a living wage, from the dishwasher, waitresses, waitstaff, everyone. Everyone made a living working in my restaurant. Sometimes I didn't as a result, but it was important for me to make sure that everybody had a was paid and well taken care of. That was number one. And I felt that people that were taken care of will take care of other people.
Okay.
So, and that was an important part of my business strategy, was to be better than everyone else, to have, you know, a staff that loved what they did and loved doing the work they did and loved working for the people they worked for. And I think that was a winning combination. It's something I learned young and when I was in the restaurant business from my mentors, and I just carried that idea forward.
Okay, just being really thoughtful and considerate of other people.
Yeah, just trying to, you know, I want to be the boss that people wanted to work for, that I would want to work for. So that's how I approached it, and that's how I approach my life. If I'm going to be leading someone or people, I want to be the leader that I would want. So, I mean, I think that's just basic common sense to me.
That certainly makes sense. Did you have both bosses and leaders that you looked up to, and also ones that were behaving in ways that you were a lesson for you that you don't want to behave like that?
Certainly. I mean, I've had leaders, bosses that run the gamut from being great and like the best at what they do to people that you would be like, wow, how did you get to this level? And I took all those things in and fashioned a career out of it.
What would you say would be some of the attributes of a good leader, a good boss?
Someone who listens. Someone listens more than they speak.
Okay.
I think that's first and foremost. I think you have to hear what people are saying, and because they're your staff are the one that's facing the community. I mean, in a restaurant situation, so that's what we're talking about. I'm in the back doing cooking, so they're the ones that are facing the community. They have something to say. I mean, you have to listen to what they have to say. They have valuable input that if you dismiss them or treat them lesser, that doesn't make for a good business as far as I'm concerned.
One of my past guests that I had was the owner of a doggy daycare called Waggyland. He's also one of my best friends. But I remember I asked him that same question, like, what are the attributes about you that's making your business so successful? And that's exactly what he said, was being a good listener. And I think when people think of good leadership, they think of posture and saying the right thing. And I don't think the first thing people would think of is good listening.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I'd always enjoy when my boss listened to me, when I had something to say or something to add and took my thoughts into consideration. So I always felt that that was something that I should do. And then as I learned going forward and the education that I learned doing business, you know, being a leader in the business, it rang true. It just always seemed to be the right thing to do. So I used it as a cornerstone.
Great. Now let's talk about food service. Now,
sure.
You were providing meals to people with disposable income in
right.
New Jersey, I assume,
yep.
Which is very different from what you're doing here.
Absolutely.
So tell me about the clientele and servicing those clientele. What was important? What was the top priority that you would keep in mind in meeting the needs of people who are buying meals from you?
Sure. So what I did there is we were not the cheapest by far. We were a rather expensive place comparatively to what could be offered at other places around me. But what we did was do it excellently. Everything was executed correctly, high quality ingredients, prepared thoughtfully, healthily in that regard, and just having a staff that's knowledgeable and understanding what they're doing and creating an environment where people are happy and friendly and where you want to come and see. And my clientele were working people, mostly, you know, business people, served a lot of offices. We had delivery. We had two delivery drivers constantly going out, delivering large lunches to corporate clients all over our area. And that's how I made a living. I mean, that's helping the fortunate, you know, buy $15 or $20 lunches every day. That's where I made my business.
So when you're focusing on excellence and trying to get a premium for that, how do you have to market that? Or is it just the experience of consuming your product and experiencing what you have to offer? Is it sort of automatic, or
automatic. It's something that was organic. I always felt that organic was better. I don't want to tell everybody how great I am. You come and see how great I am. I feel like when you open something new, you're something in any location, people want to check you out, see
sure.
what's going on. So I used that to my advantage when I did, hey, I'm a new place, I'm here. I did that kind of advertising. But I tried to deliver from day one, and I think it paid off. It was making sure that you got done what you wanted to get, follow through with your vision. You have a vision to follow through with it. So that's really basically what it was. And just I did that, put my head down, and kept working.
And was that it was 15 years.
Right.
And so obviously it started with this vision, you executed and realized delivering excellence, and then at some point you no longer did it. So this was somewhat of a journey for you.
Yeah, I mean, it was the reason why what got to that point where I didn't want to do it anymore was a lot of personal tragedy in my life. I had my parents passed away close together. And they were an integral part of my restaurant. They were there all the time. Not that they did anything. My father helped a little bit, but just not having them there. And then my in-laws also passed away, all within a 4-year period, and it just was devastating to me and my then wife. But it just took the wind out of my sails, and that was when I decided that it was time to sell it and try something different.
So you went from providing food to people with disposable income to a situation now where that's not the case.
Right.
So what are some of the similarities? What can you tell me about some things that you learned or were important in what you were doing previously that are important here?
Sure. So one thing I want to say first, in the back door of my restaurant was always open to anyone who didn't have enough money to spend to go into the front of the building. So if you needed a meal, you're always welcome to come to the back door. My back door was always open to the homeless or whomever needed anything in there. And I would give free meals to anybody who needed it.
So, was that something you did the entire 15 years?
Well, it's something I picked up probably around year 5 or 6.
What made you do that?
People were just in the neighborhood that I was in was not the best all the time. I mean, it was more of a blue collar, tough kind of neighborhood.
Okay.
Because the rents were cheaper, and I can draw from some of the wealthier towns around to come in.
Uh-huh.
But what I saw was people that were struggling. That right around, and I just couldn't say no to someone who needed a meal. I mean, how could you say no?
I think a lot of people say no.
I think
a lot of restaurant owners would say no.
Yeah, no, everybody, and you know, we made jokes about it where people would. Come and you would offer them, you know, whatever you had a lot of, and they would say, can I have this, and that, you know, make an order. And it's funny. I never took an insult to it. It's human nature. And so I just always had some kind of civic mind to help people, I guess, and that. So and it was always something that I wanted to do, but it's very hard to find a career where you help people. So, but it was just something I just did instinctually.
And so now you did find a career.
I did.
To do that.
Yeah, and it took a long time to get here. But some of the similarities, I guess, between going from that to this is leadership is always leadership, no matter what the job is. You know, running a business is running a business.
I mean,
running our place is a business. It's what we're doing. We're not making a product to make profit. We're delivering a product to help people that don't have. But at the end of the day, I still have a budget to manage with. I got to get revenue. I got to pay my staff. I got to keep the lights on. I mean, all those things are still the same. So running the business is exactly like running the business. Just some specific things that you learn as you go along, which I'm still learning. Learning the nonprofit world, which has its own quirks and weirdness that I'm learning. But I think leadership is just always the same no matter where you are. So I just take that experience and bring it to my staff there and try to make an environment where everybody feels comfortable, everybody feels welcome. And that's super important, especially in what I'm doing, is that no one should feel unwelcome. You know, if that's the case, then you're failing at your mission. So,
right. Yeah. So you're obviously a very empathetic person, very aware of others. I assume, were you always like this as a kid, or did something change that made you more like this?
I wasn't always like this. I was a bit of a narcissist for a lot of my life, to be honest with you. The things I did, even when I was doing well for people or doing good things, the right things, the reason why I was doing them was to get a result, mm-hmm. right? I knew that. So I don't want to sit here and say to you, hey, I'm some saint or some, you know, I'm not. But I learned over the years by just, I guess, maybe doing a repetition that there's I just get a lot more joy out of doing the right thing versus doing it for myself. And I learned how to be a better person through time, I guess. There was no aha moment or anything like that. I just woke up one day and realized, hey, you know what? You've really made a change in your life and you're a different person now and you see the world differently.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time or age. I don't know.
I think it is, actually. I mean, I think that, but I don't think everybody does that. I think that if you are aware of what's going on, I think eventually you're going to become more aware and sensitive and less selfish. I think that people, I think guys in particular sometimes can be very selfish, particularly like in their 20s.
Sure.
I think at some point, but then there's people that are my age that are still self-centered.
Absolutely.
So
I think, I think I do chalk up to experience a little bit, but I think it's, I think if you had some experience with people who were givers, and I just saw that joy that they got out of that. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother was a giver, and I started thinking like long and hard about her and the things that she did in her community.
Yeah. What kind of things did she do?
Well, she was a center of. I'm from Baltimore originally. She lived in Baltimore, and she would sit outside on her front porch. And the whole community would come to her. They had a problem, an issue, just somebody to talk to. She was always there, and she'd always find a way to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. Call someone. She's magic. I don't even know where this woman. You know, she didn't have a dime, two dimes to rub together, but she helped everyone she could, and she would give everything she had. And I just saw that. I was like, what an amazing woman! Mm-hmm. Like, what a role model she was. She was amazing, mm-hmm. and I guess maybe channeling her a little bit in my life, thinking about her energy and all the joy that she brought people. I felt I wanted some of that too.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
See, it feels so much better than going after something, money. I mean, that it doesn't mean anything. It's the joy of human interaction, which is really makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah, I completely agree. Good. David, is there anything else that you want people to know about our place or... Well, about your experience and your journey?
Well, one of the things that really surprised me is, you know, I guess I had a lot of preconceived notions about the clientele that you would get, like that I would deal with a job like this.
Okay.
So I didn't have, because I have never had any real practical experience besides what goes on at my back door and, you know, doing some volunteer work here and there as I went through. But I realized that the constituency at our place is predominantly senior citizens.
Okay.
They're just... our neighbors. They're people that live right here amongst us. Mm-hmm. They're not some special kind of class of people that or undesirable class. Mm-hmm. They're just regular folks, and that's all bad on me for having some kind of preconceived notion about that. So that's something I really want to kind of get the word out. I don't know if other people have that same preconceived notion. I can't. I don't know what's in the hearts of minds of everybody here in Vermont, but mm-hmm. for me at least, I had some kind of thoughts about that, and I was wrong.
Okay.
And I think I want to tell everybody that, you know, these are just people that need help, and they're good people. Mm-hmm. And they may not agree with, you know, I may not agree with their politics, you may not agree mm-hmm. with their, what, how they live their life, but that doesn't make them any less or any less desirable to help.
Okay.
And if they need it. And so I think that's the big message. Like, we people in our community need help, and I think we need to rise up and help them.
Well, good. Well, I'm glad that we have you in this role.
Well, thank you.
To help them. That's great.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Well, David, thank you so much for hanging with me today.
I appreciate it. It was great.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
My name is Ricky McGeckren, and you have been listening to Eager to Know, the podcast. If you haven't already, please go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me next week for another Eager to Know podcast.